Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it's a regularly scheduled weekly episode where we have selected one game to discuss. We're going to talk about what the game is all about when you play it. We're going to talk about the strategies involved in the game. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the game's design. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Hero Realms, designed by Darwin Castle and Robert Doherty, and published by White Wizard Games in 2016. And this is sort of a re-theme slash re-implementation slash remake of Star Realms. So there will be a lot of differences, a lot of similarities, though, and a lot of comparisons.
Yeah, although I don't believe we've done an episode on Star Realms.
Yeah, I don't think we have either.
So this will kind of be an introduction to that game as well.
Yeah.
So we'll be sure to, if I guess we've mentioned
provide
Star
context.
Realms before. We'll provide some context, but yeah. Anyways, so Hero Realms, to give a short description of the game. In Hero Realms, players take the role of a powerful hero who must collect gold, collect helpful items and powerful allies in order to defeat the opposing hero and their forces. And it is a deck-building game.
Yes.
And that's the gist of it. This is a two-player deck-building game, just like Star Realms was. Both players start out with some amount of health, and the cards that you start with in your deck can either deal damage, protect your life, or give you gold, which you must then spend on cards in a trade row, which you add to your deck that will also help you acquire more cards or deal more damage to your opponent or protect your life more. And in some cases, interact with your opponent in other ways.
Right.
So that's a short description of Hero Realms.
Yeah. So let's get into the specifics of the rules.
Yes. Right. So one player goes first. They draw three cards from their starting deck of 10 cards. The second player draws five cards, and then every player will draw five cards from then on at the beginning of every turn, or I guess at the end of every turn, since it's a deck building game.
Yeah.
Now the starting cards, or the starting deck, sorry, are pre-selected 10 specific cards that are ascribed to each of the five classes in this game. Matthew, can you explain how the classes work?
Okay, so technically, the base game doesn't have classes, and every player has a symmetrical starting deck, which is seven coins, each providing one money. Then there is a ruby, which has two money, and then a short sword and a mace, which is three and two damage, respectively. Now, the classes are technically expansions, but they are kind of billed as part of the drive of the game, sort of the appeal of it. And we played with two classes out of the five. And these classes provide a different starting deck with different card values, as well as an ability that you can choose from two abilities based on what the class is, one of which is a powerful ability that can only be used once per game. The other is a less powerful ability that can be used multiple times per game by paying money. And so to give an example, the two classes we had were Fighter and Cleric. And if you have that page open, you can go ahead and read off sort of what their cards are like.
Right, so for the cleric, I'll start with that. They have two abilities to choose from, like you mentioned. The first one is they can pay two gold and tap the card or turn it sideways to show that you spent the ability for that turn. It gives target player three life, and that player's champions gain one extra toughness until the end of their next turn. Have we gone over what champions are yet?
No, we haven't gone over any of the card types.
We'll talk about that in a moment. The other ability is Resurrect. So this is an ability that they can only use once per game by trashing the card. And it says that it allows them to put a champion from their discard pile into play, and they can use that ability only on a champion that was stunned since your last turn. So we're talking about champions. This is a card type in the game that appears in some of the starting decks and also in the deck for the trade row. And the cleric starts with two of them in their starting deck, actually. So champions are cards that have a toughness to them. And when you play them, they stay on the battlefield until they are defeated or stunned. In this game, it's called stunned when they're defeated.
Yeah.
Sometimes champions will have a static ability that just happens every turn. Other times they have an activated ability. So they must be turned sideways to show that you've activated their ability.
I believe the terminology is expend in this game.
Expended. They must be expended to show that you've used their ability. But they stay on the battlefield when you do that. And like I said, they all have some amount of toughness to them. And your opponent must deal, as much damage as equal to their toughness in order to remove them from the battlefield and send them to your discard pile. Some right. champions are called guards. And when the guards haven't been expended, your opponent has to defeat them and stun them before they can deal any damage to you.
Or your other champions.
Or your other champions. Other champions won't... If they're not guards, it's optional whether or not you attack them before you go to your opponent. And we'll talk about in the strategy portion whether or not you should. So the cleric, with their first ability, they add toughness to their champions. They start with two of them in their deck, just one health champions that can be expended to deal one damage, and they are both guards. They also have 5 pieces of gold, which is, I think, the same in every deck. Every deck has 5 pieces of gold, which just give you 1 gold.
What? It says cleric has 6 pieces of gold.
Oh, hey, wouldn't you know it? They have an extra piece of gold. I think all the other starter decks have 5, but the cleric has 6. They have a card called Prayer Beads that can either give you 2 golds or 5 health, and then they have a weapon called Spiked Mace that deals 2 damage. And being a weapon doesn't actually make a big difference. It's just the same as a item or ability or whatever. You just play it, and then it goes to your discard, but it deals 2 damage. The fighter that we played with has 2 abilities, just like the cleric. One of them is they can pay 2 gold and activate it just to deal 2 damage straight up. The other one is that they can trash the card and once per game deal 8 damage.
And then they also have 6 gold. No,
they also have 6 gold. Wow, I'm eating my words. They also have 6 gold. They have a ruby, which is worth 2 gold. And they have a shield bearer, which is a guard with 3 toughness, a champion. And they have a longsword, which deals 3 damage, and a throwing axe, which deals 2 damage. However, it states that if playing the throwing axe would give you 7 or more total combat this turn, so you would deal 7 or more damage, then you may draw a card.
Yep.
So those are the 2 that we used in our playthroughs of this game.
Right.
The other classes are Ranger, Thief, and Wizard.
Right.
Do we want to go through those real quick, what they do?
Yeah, really quick. So Ranger...
maybe we can just say the gist of it.
Yeah, Ranger has an ability. Its once per game ability is draw a card. You may stun target champion. So get out of jail free card by just assassinating something. And then it also has one that lets you look at the top 3 cards of your deck, and you may put 2 of them into your discard pile and the rest on top. And that's the one that costs 2 money. They have a... Instead of 6 gold, one of their cards that gives them 1 money makes the next champion they acquire cost 1 less. And then they have a bow and an arrow, and when you play the arrow, if you have the bow in play, you draw a card. The thief has 5 gold and 2 rubies, and then it also has 3 throwing knives, which deal more damage the more throwing knives you have in play. And their ability they can repeatedly do makes the opponent discard a card and they heal. You heal, I mean. And then their once per game ability lets them buy a card from the opponent's discard pile. And then the wizard has a once per game ability that deals 4 damage to an opponent and each of their champions. And then their repeated ability is pay 2 gold and 1 life to draw a card. They have 5 gold, a staff that draws a card if they have 2 or more actions in play. They have 2 ignites, which are actions that deal 2 damage. And they have a card that gives 1 money and the next action they acquire costs 1 less. and then they have a champion that is not a guard, but has 2 health and can be expended for 1 damage, 1 gold, or 1 health. So that's kind of the quick overview of those. And so through that, you can kind of see different card types being brought up. So let's go ahead and cover the general card types. We mentioned champions. There's also items, which are what like the weapons and the money fall into.
Mm-hmm.
There are actions, which are sort of just either spells or just actions per se. These are the other type of card that you play, and then it goes to your discard at the end of turn. And it should be noted that they're, and that these do have, like, subtypes. So, mm-hmm. like, the cat familiar has the subtype of feline. The ignite has the subtype of spell. Fire staff mm-hmm. has item, magic weapon, staff. I don't right. really know how important these are, per se.
Right. I don't think in the playthroughs we did, I don't think we encountered any kind of thing that yeah. referenced the card types.
And looking as over the base set, I don't see anything either.
As far as I've experienced, all of those extra stuff, it's kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Like, and even like the distinction between items and abilities and whatever is kind of arbitrary, because yeah. If it's not a champion if it's not a champion, then it functions just the same as every other card, which is to say that you play it, you get its effect, and then it goes to your discard pile at the end of the turn.
Well, I accidentally bumped my microphone. I was gonna say, I think the only items you can get are the fire gems, which starts to go into how the market works. So there are there's the deck of cards in the market, and mm-hmm. then there are always going to be 5 cards in the market row, the trade row. These are just the 5 cards from the top of the market deck, and you can buy any of these at any point on your turn for the cost listed in the top right corner. And these have factions, which the starting decks don't have. The starting cards mm-hmm. don't have.
We'll go over the factions in a moment.
Yeah. And when you buy a card, you put it in your discard pile, and then you immediately replace that card with the next card from the market deck. And what I was saying is, I don't think there's any more items in the market deck, but there is one item off to the side called the Fire Gem. It costs 2 money to buy, and then it produces 2 money when you play it, and you can also trash it for 2 damage.
Isn't it 3 damage in this game?
Oh, I think you're right. It is 3. This is sort of a re-implementation of the Explorers from Star Realms, which did the same thing, but I think with 2 damage.
Right.
This is the typical deck builder, you can always buy this if you want to type of right. thing.
It's a cheap option that's better than your starting cards, but it's not something that you want to keep in your deck for the rest of your game.
Exactly.
It's the same as like kicks in DC Deck Builder, if you're familiar right. with those.
Silver and Dominion.
So you mentioned factions when you're talking about the trade row.
Yeah.
So the cards that you start with in your starting decks do not have any faction associated to them. They are generic cards. And the same thing is true for the Fire Gems. They are generic. They do not have a faction ascribed to them. But every card that is in the trade row deck has a faction to it.
Yes. And these 4 factions are Imperial, which is yellow, and they deal a lot with healing and champions.
Mm-hmm.
There is Guild, which is blue, and these deal a lot with like card acquisition. Like, they'll make it easier to buy cards, or when you buy cards, they'll go into your hand or deck.
Mm-hmm. They also have a slight sub-theme of making your opponent discard.
Right. They also have above average money economy yeah. gain. There is Wild, which is green, and these also have a lot of champions, but they're much more offensive, and they're right. also Wild... much more focused on making the opponent discard.
Yeah, Wild is about raw damage and forcing your opponent to discard.
And then there is Red, which is Necromancy, Necromancers. And these have the most to deal with trashing cards from your hand and discard pile, meaning to permanently remove them from your deck.
Mm-hmm.
As well as kind of above average economy, but below average damage.
I thought that, I mean, they have better damage than yellow and blue.
I don't think they have better damage than blue. They might have better damage than yellow.
You were doing some pretty good damage with the red faction in that second game we played.
That's just because I had a lot of red cards. Well, anyways. Oh yeah.
I mean, that's why it's a sub-theme.
Well, anyways. Yeah, that does go to the second point, which is many cards will have faction bonuses, where mm-hmm. if you have another card of the same faction in play, then those faction bonuses become available. So the first time you play Intimidation, which has a faction bonus of 2 money, you won't get it, but if you play another blue card, you will get Intimidation. And if that new blue card has a faction bonus, you would also get that faction bonus, and every faction bonus for blue going forward.
Right. The way that Star Realms in this game work is that it doesn't really matter what order you play your cards in, for the most part. In some cases, one card will like copy the effect of another card, so that card already has to be in play for that to work. But actually, I don't think it does, because it's kind of like you play all the cards out just to show what they do, and then you kind of choose the order that you do them in. And you can always go back and use different parts of the card at different times. Like, for example, the Fire Gem says it gives you 2 gold, and you can trash it to deal 3 damage. That doesn't mean that if you trash it for the 3 damage, you don't get the 2 gold. You get both of those things.
Right. The way
you get the 2 gold, you can buy something if you want then, and then you can trash it for the damage. You could even just bank the 2 gold, trash it for the 3 damage, and then spend the 2 gold later because you didn't lose it by trashing the card.
The way it's presented is the damage in gold go into a pool that is then spent at your convenience.
Right. And and those faction abilities can be activated at any point, even way after you've played the card.
Yeah.
Another thing to note about faction abilities is that the champions for each faction can also activate the faction abilities of non-champion cards and other champions. Just as long as they're in play, then they can also count for that faction bonus.
Yep.
So there's pretty much no crossover between factions or like there's no reason to cross over between factions in this game except for the scarcity of factions.
Right. There's no direct synergy between them. Like, no, you know, if you have a yellow card and a blue card, do this.
Right.
They just overlap in what they do a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
So I think let's go into strategy then.
Yes, and how about we open up just by going over general deck building strategy, because it's been a while since we've covered a deck builder. I don't think we've even covered one since we did Dominion.
The deck building episode?
Or the deck building episode. Yeah, whichever one was most recently. But either way, they were both a while ago. So let's just start.
Oh, well, technically we did Mystic Veil, but yeah.
Yeah, Mystic Veil was different, though.
Okay, yeah,
So anyways.
Deck building is a prevalent genre nowadays, and a lot of them share the same fundamental strategy pieces, which, first of all, is a smaller deck is good, because it lets you draw the cards you want more often, and when you get more cards to put into your deck, you'll be able to use them quicker, and you'll be able to reuse the same card multiple times. To get to this, you have to trash cards or just not buy too much fluff. In Hero Realms, the red faction, the Necro, they have the only trashing. And even getting one Necro card will make it better than the player who doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. Because trashing is just that good. As far as what to trash, your starting cards are almost always garbage, so... they don't scale well as the game goes on. Mm-hmm. So usually you would start getting rid of your gold as soon as possible, and then go from there.
Yeah, by any metric, your gold is the weakest card in your starting deck. So absolutely start by removing those, and then move on to the remaining starter cards, because they're all weaker than any given card you can buy from the trade row.
Right. In general, with Hero Realms especially, any given card you can buy is better than your starting cards, except for maybe a few cards for specific classes. But also because of like the faction bonuses that want multiple of the same faction, and the fact that card draw is a bit less frequent in Hero Realms compared to other games, even Star Realms, then you want to make sure that your five cards per turn maximizes effectiveness. And because discard's super common in this game as well, you want every card to be individually powerful.
Right.
And so, sort of piggybacking off of that concept, you generally want to buy the like the fire gems pretty early on, but then also trash them pretty early on.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable rule of thumb just to say, like, if you can't buy anything, or if the things that you can't buy anything, or the cards in the trade row don't look all that good, just buy a bunch of fire gems and then trash them as soon as you draw them.
Yeah. So what's important about this is the 6 gold mark is a big power spike in cards. This is where, like, most of the cards with proper names that are, like, big bombs come in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 6 to 8 gold. And you can't get that if you draw 5 gold from your starting hand, or from your starting deck. So, if you can get 2 fire gems, then you're much more likely to get 6 gold at least. Because that'd be fire gem and 4 gold, or 2 fire gems and 2 gold. You know, the more fire gems you get, the more likely it is to get that high number. Even 5 gold is pretty strong and is like the pretty good base level for what you want an individual card to be.
Mm-hmm. And also relatively difficult to obtain from a starter deck.
Yeah. So, like, even if you spend your first 2 turns buying 4, or I guess 3 fire gems, depending on how much money you have in your starting deck, you know, that means that in your second cycle through the deck where you shuffle back up, you'll usually be able to buy 2 or 3 really strong cards and go from there.
Yeah, because you're pretty likely to get a hand in the second round through the deck that has 2 fire gems in it.
Yeah. And so this is a sort of Hero Realms strategy tip, is Hero Realms is very tempo focused compared to other deck builders. As in, it's a lot less about engine building and more about just like applying pressure that still effectively lets you expand. So the fact that fire gems deal 2 damage or 3 damage each is huge, because it either means you get rid of the opponent's weaker guardians and champions so that it's harder for them to get faction bonuses. Because sometimes those are like the only way to get faction bonuses realistically in the early game, or it means you're putting pressure on them to start building up something. When you have a life lead, you have more freedom to develop economy, because you don't have to worry about dying or, you know, taking too much damage.
Right. Not to mention that after you've used your fire gems to acquire a powerful card, then it's almost like you don't really need the fire gems anymore. You'd rather just draw that card you just bought.
Exactly.
So just take them out of your deck and deal that damage. There's just a whole lot of value to trashing your fire gems as soon as you've used them to buy something good.
Right.
And even if you, it's also, you could just use them to buy more fire gems if there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. So it's kind of free 3 damage in that regard.
Yeah. You get 3 damage and you keep the same quality of deck.
Yeah.
I
do think the faction synergies, the faction bonuses are really important in this game, though.
Yeah. I think they're a little bit heavier weighted in this game. It seems like. In Star Realms, the faction bonus was just a slightly smaller bonus on top of the basic effect of a card. But in this game, it's like it's way stronger.
Yeah, oftentimes most of the card draw is locked behind faction bonuses.
Right.
So that's one thing. But also just like there's times where faction bonuses will deal more than double the amount of damage that the regular effect does. Or deal damage whatsoever. Going for those is really good. And in that regard, getting at least 1 or 2 champions of that faction is really good. Because that means that you don't have to draw 2 of the same faction in a turn to get the bonus on one of them.
So we're talking a lot about these factions. Matthew, do you have a faction tier list for this game?
Ooh, well, so I think red is definitely top tier because of trashing alone.
Now, we've played a lot of Star Realms and a little bit of Hero Realms.
Right.
So we're no expert when it comes to Hero Realms factions, but there are a ton of parallels between the factions here and with Star Realms, and we're very familiar with the ones in Star Realms. So I think I totally agree that the red faction is probably the strongest faction, just because it has the strongest effect in the game, which is trashing cards from your deck. It's the only one with that effect. And it does it very well.
Right. It has some other pretty solid cards like Influence, which is just 2 gold to buy it. It produces 3 gold and you can trash it for 3 damage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a souped up version of a Fire Gem. Yeah, so that's pretty strong. After that, it's hard to say. I think green is the next best.
So I think green is the next best because I think green beats red more than any other faction does. I think red is probably the strongest overall, but if there's one that could contend with red, it would be green, just because green is, it deals the most damage.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with a deck, when your opponent has a deck that is trashing cards every time it cycles through it and is getting more and more efficient, you need to beat them before they can reach their most efficient state.
Red is like a late game faction in that regard.
Yeah.
Or it supplements late game strats.
Yeah. If the game goes on long enough, the red deck cannot be beaten because they will have every hand will be a bomb hand. We'll just destroy you.
Yeah.
So the green deck is, you know, it can sometimes race the red deck because it deals just a ton of damage, and hopefully it can end the game before the red gets to its most efficient form.
And discard is pretty strong in this game because, again, there's less card draw and overall card value is stronger. So it's more often to make the opponent start with a worse hand in this game.
Also, discard is stronger against a deck that has a higher card value per, you know, card in their hand.
Yeah, theoretically, just mathematically, I guess.
Your discard is best at holding off the red deck,
mm-hmm.
than just like any other kind of defensive thing like guards or champions or life gain.
Yeah.
It's
hard to say that, what I think is third. Maybe yellow?
In Star Realms, I played a lot of that, and yellow seemed to do the best between the remaining two factions. But in Star Realms, yellow did a lot more healing.
And it did more discard.
And it did more discard. And it had more card draw. So
yeah.
And blue in Star Realms was just the worst because it worked on economy, but you know, you just use your economy to buy bigger ships that help you buy bigger ships, but you don't end up doing a lot of damage that way.
Yeah.
It had pretty slow tempo because of that. Like it could buy a lot of cards, but the cards weren't really doing anything.
Yeah.
And then it had a discard. I think just the yellow had the discard.
Yellow and maybe green had a sub theme, but this game
blue just
though
seemed the weakest. In this game, I think yellow still takes it over blue.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. And
when we were playing, I was sort of keeping up with you because I tried to build a yellow deck with the clerics, which is the most synergistic leader to build a yellow deck with, because yellow has a lot of guardians and clerics buff up their guardians.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of able to keep pace with you. Like I was healing damage and dealing damage, and you were just dealing, you weren't healing anything, and we were even in life for a good portion of the game, even though I started out at lower life than you. So for a good portion of the game I was slowly eking out a victory, but you had a couple powerful effects that stunned my champions, which kind of ruined me. Which that gets to stunning is very powerful,
right? And then that is the one thing. Blue has a few just straight up stunning effects.
Okay,
so in a way it's kind of a weakness cycle. I can't remember the term for a rock paper scissors type of system where everything has a strength and a weakness so that it's an even cycle.
Yeah, usually but these kinds of things are a triangle, but
yeah, it's like cycle. Green beats red because green is faster and doesn't let them set up. Yellow beats green because yellow can survive most of green's damage. blue yeah. beats yellow because blue circumvents dealing damage to the champions in the first place. Red beats blue because if blue tries to build up econ, red just steamrolls.
Yeah.
So that's sort of a way to picture the balance of it.
Right. That's the ideal situation with this game. But and I mean, maybe maybe if we played, you know, a dozen more times, that might become more apparent.
Yeah. Like,
I guess we didn't really find out what the crosses, you know, how they affect the, something on the opposite side of that cycle, except we know that your red deck beat my yellow deck because eventually it just got so efficient that it could get through any champions I put out.
Right.
Or stun them. You also had some stun effects in red.
Right.
But yeah, that's the ideal setup, and maybe it's like that, but as far as we can tell, red is slightly better and has a good chance of beating any of the three factions, even though green has some advantages over it.
Yeah.
So if you play this game and you want to, you know, go with the winning strategy, just buy every red card you see. I remember, this is just an anecdote, but I remember there was a Star Realms tournament at the game store near us one time, and a couple people showed up, and one guy who showed up had never played Star Realms before, and he asked me what to do, and I just told him just buy all the red cards, and he ended up winning the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, red was very good in Star Realms, and it's still pretty good here in Hero Realms.
Right. So, in regards to champions and guardians specifically, I think it's oftentimes worth it to expend guardians unless, like, you're gonna die to the opponent's next attack.
Yeah.
So, like, if you have 20 health, then maybe not. 20 health or less. But over that, like, I mean, usually the guardian is strong enough anyways, either by the expend ability or just the fact that it exists and provides a faction bonus, that the opponent is still encouraged to kill it. Like, it's in their best interest.
Right.
So, yeah, more often than not, that's kind of fine. Unless you have a non-guardian that you really want to save. But I think most of the time, like, it's fine to just go ahead and use the guardian ability, because the benefit it provides you is better than any sort of blocking other stuff.
Right. You could kind of picture it like every guardian, their expendable ability is usually just about as good as a slightly cheaper card, like a card that maybe costs one or two gold less, but only that much. So you paid more for a slightly weaker effect, but you can use that effect every turn if your opponent isn't killing off your champions.
Yeah.
Which is very powerful. You can get like a ton of value out of that.
Yeah.
So essentially, if your opponent doesn't want to let you have that value, then they have to spend some of their damage taking out your guardian, or right. or just even just a regular champion that isn't a guardian.
Right.
They kind of have to do that kind of thing.
It's also that with guardians being in play, that means they're not in the cycle of the deck, which means that they're not diluting the opponent's deck as much. Because think of it, you have 11 cards, one of them's a guardian. If you play that guardian and you then shuffle your other cards back in, then you have a perfect 10 cards that you can draw in two turns. And then the cards that you buy in those two turns will go into the deck again. But if not, then you're less likely to draw the 10 cards that you want and instead just draw the same guardian again.
Right. I mean, we talked about how good trashing your cards from your deck was. Having a guardian out in play is of similar effect.
Right,
on
it
your
temporarily trashes it, but not quite.
So because of all this, your opponent is basically forced to spend some of their resources to get rid of that, because they can't afford to give you that value or give you that good card draw quality. So essentially what your guardian has done is it's used an ability that was, you know, the ability of a slightly less expensive card, but then it also soaked up some amount of damage for you. And because of that, now the card has gained its full value.
Right.
And so even if it is expended that way, like, you still got as much as you put into it money wise by playing it.
Right.
Maybe even a little more so, because taking damage in this game, like you mentioned earlier, is kind of a, it's an important thing to be dealing damage to your opponent.
Oh yeah. That's how you win
their life. Yeah, that's how you win, of course. So soaking up some of that damage is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so so you should be activating your guardians more often than not, and you should be taking out your opponent's champions and guardians when you can, because you don't want them to get that repeated value.
Exactly. Possibly.
There's probably some ways you can weigh it. Like if you're okay with them getting it twice in a row because maybe you know you got a stun card coming up that can take the guardian out or whatever, you know, maybe you let it stick around. But I'd say for the most part, you just want to take them out.
Yeah. Or like if a guardian just provides like one damage or two damage or one gold, then it's not as big of a deal. Like if it is a very small amount, then that might be okay. I mean, you got to balance it. Like if the opponent's been having trouble buying cards, maybe get rid of the ones that produce gold anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the damage the guardian adds is enough to kill your stuff, then maybe while you have the advantage, you can go ahead and press it. But, you know, for the most part, you know, like what we said.
Mm-hmm. Now, at some point in the game, you might want to stop buying cards.
Yeah.
Or you might want to just hold off until you can purchase the very useful cards.
Right. You don't have to buy cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the last deck building tip and strategy tip that I have for this game, is that eventually you're good. You're set.
Yeah.
You just got to draw your cards and finish the game out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd say the only cards you want to buy are cards that are going to help you like draw cards or maybe cycle through your deck a little better or trash some of the less useful cards.
There are some cards that are individually strong that might be worth it, even if they're not of the faction you're in. But those are often the bombs that are like 6 to 8 gold.
Yeah. Like stuff that lets you draw 2 cards or whatever.
Yeah.
Or deal a ton of damage. Yeah. Or stun a champion.
Exactly. I have on the top of this pile of cards Firebomb, which does 8 damage and stuns a champion and draws a card.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That's a bomb. Certainly a bomb.
It's literally a bomb.
All right. So if that's it for strategy, we can start talking about the design of it.
Yes.
And this game kind of offers us an interesting opportunity because, like, we've been comparing it to Star Realms. And when you've got that kind of comparison, you can, like, see the changes and the decisions they made when designing the game a little more clearer. Like, you can really notice the differences and try and find, you know, why they made those changes.
Yes.
So, for example... and I don't think this is part of like making any updates to Star Realm. I think this is just kind of the nature of this theme, is that there's a lot more champions and guardians in this game than there were bases in Star Realm. Star Realms had a similar mechanic called a base
outpost
or an outpost. It had health. Sometimes it was like a guardian where you had to destroy it before you could go through and deal damage to something else. So this game has a higher density of those kinds of cards.
Right.
I think just because it makes sense to be recruiting all these companions in this fantasy setting, it's easier to think of those and to think of like a bunch of like weird items that your person would be carrying all by themselves. So
I also,
because
think,
of that, there's a bunch of changes.
Yeah. I also think thematically mass commerce is much more of a thing in sci-fi. And like superpower is much more of a thing in like dungeon fantasy, for lack of a better term. So like this game kind of fits more better as an aggressive game, and when you have a lot of power, you can have a lot more champions to take that damage.
Well I think that the champions are here for a thematic reason, and I think the damage is here for because the champions are here.
Yeah, it works both
that's
ways.
Kind of what I'm getting at. I'm not sure if the power is just a part of the theme of this game,
as much
as the champions are.
I would hesitate to say it might be a chicken or the
egg. Party.
I mean, they both work together.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of damage in this game, way more than there is in Star Realms.
Yes.
The game has been rebalanced around this, because now individual cards are dealing damage more often, and more they deal more damage in general than in Star Realms. They have to be a couple other changes to the game to compensate for that.
Right.
Like, for example, you start with more health in this game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Star Realms, you started at 50 health every game. There weren't any factions or character classes like fighter and cleric. Yeah. It was just 50 health, same starting deck. In this game, every character starts with more than 50 health. Like anywhere from like 52 or 53, I think, is the lowest, and it goes up to 60.
Right.
So there's that. There's also a lot less card draw, because card draw is, in this game, essentially means dealing a bunch more damage.
Oh, I was just going to say, the symmetrical starting decks would have both players start at 50 health.
Oh, okay.
However, I think Star Realm started at 30 or 40. It was smaller than 50, I think.
Gotcha.
But no, yeah.
Either way, there's more damage, in this game. You start with more health.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing about things dealing more damage is, like we said, it makes individual card value better, which helps it helps ease some of the problems of having a trade row. Because with trade row games, it's hard to have like engine heavy games, because you just might not be able to even see the engine piece in the trade row during the game. So by making kind of the power level of cards a bit more universal, it assuages that risk of just not getting that card in the market, and instead being able to buy stuff that's overall useful anyways.
Right.
Something I noticed, there's no market manipulation in this game. Star Realms had cards that removed cards from the market, so it would, you know, trash it and replace it with something else. This game does not. And that's
I think that was part of the blue faction in Star Realms.
Yeah.
The one that could do that the best.
Yeah. I think part of that's because there's a less of a focus on economy and engine building in general. So, like, there doesn't need to be something that helps you dig for engine pieces. Also, that I think this game wants you to start being aggressive sooner, and just making it so that you're not kind of hinted that you can dig for specific cards kind of puts players in that mindset. Like, out of sight, out of mind. And then, like we said, damage is more split out among everything. And the other abilities, like, each class kind of has their own thing they can do, so to speak. Which, in Star Realms, these were a lot more spread out. Like, I think in Star Realms, green and yellow could both discard cards. Whereas in Hero Realms, it's just green. In Star Realms, yellow and blue could both heal it, but in Hero Realms, it's just yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all kind of given their own identity that's unique to them a bit more so. But they all still kind of deal around combat. Like, blue's identity is less about actions and more about stunning and stuff like that.
Right. Another consequence of having this high density of minions and guardians is that there's more effects that just straight up destroy champions.
Right.
I just use three terms for like the same card, but there's more effects that just straight up destroy champions in this game. I think there may have been like one or two cards in Star Realms that blow up a base, but in this game, there's a handful of cards that can stun a champion, which is just to say it destroys them and puts them in the discard pile.
Mm-hmm.
You could see why they would do that, because there's so many of them, but I feel like this is like a really unfun mechanic to have in the game and to have frequently. I don't know like how else to say it, but it's like, I don't know. Maybe we could talk through that.
Right.
Why it's kind of unfun to have that.
I mean, so you think of it like, A lot of the like stronger champions that you would want to use the instant kill on are the ones with proper names. They do cooler stuff and more unique effects.
Right.
So the opponent just going in and saying nope kind of ruins that experience to be able to mess around with them and do their cool thing more.
Mm-hmm.
They have pretty high health, but also it negates the purpose. But I do think, so from what it looks like, blue has the most stun a champion effects, if not the only stun a champion effects. I didn't remember seeing anything in red or yellow, at least.
Mm-hmm. And from a glance, can you tell whether they're mostly faction bonuses or just the basic ability of a card?
It's hard to say. It seems even.
Okay. Even still, that's a really powerful effect to put as just the basic ability of a card.
Right, yeah. But, like, blue doesn't have anything else going on to affect combat, really. Like, they have below-average champions, and their damage is okay, but, like, they don't have healing, which helps soak up damage. They don't have discard that helps prevent that. And if their other, like, theme is economy, we already talked about how economy is less rewarded in this game. Mm-hmm. So I guess it fits with the goal of having each thing have something important they can do, just in the context of the game's, you know, mechanics and how they reward the play styles. Mm-hmm. But it does feel bad when your guy gets blown up.
Yeah,
and your thing gets blown up.
I mean, just because it is a champion and it has, you know, a health like this, you kind of expect it to be around for at least two turns.
Yeah.
But the existence of these cards, it almost felt like it never got to stick around for two turns. None of my champions got to do that. I think when we played, you had one guy stick around for two turns just because I was building a more defensive strategy and I just didn't have enough damage to take care of all of your champions.
Right. But at least it soaks up damage when that happens.
Well, that's another thing, though. It doesn't soak up damage.
No, when I mean, stun it. No, I mean, when you deal damage to a thing to blow it up, it soaks up damage. But when you stun it, it doesn't. That's what I understand.
Right. And that's bad.
Yeah.
Because it's like they needed to add more damage to this game, so they did. But they also added this other mechanic that circumvents the damage, and it makes the damage even more powerful because now you don't have to soak it anymore. It's like it's almost like there's no reason to even have cards that have guard on them.
Yeah.
Because it's like either it doesn't matter because you're just going to blow it up with a stun, or, you know, your opponent's probably just wanting to blow these things up anyways.
Yep. So this is something interesting. So famously, Darwin Castle and Rob Doherty are in the Magic Hall of Fame, meaning they were or are professional Magic players at some point. And this is a very, like, TCG mindset thing of a card that can instantly remove a bomb. And in a trading card game where cards don't often come back from the discard pile, this is a bit more fair, because while the opponent has removed your thing, you can feel comfortable that they're not going to be able to play that card again. That's super efficient. But in a deck builder, it's the opposite. It's that everything comes back, but it creates... All right, sorry, a plane flew over my house. So in a deck builder, it's that the efficient card they played to remove your cool card will come back, and it feels kind of hopeless or, like, despairful. That, like, you know, your cool card will come back, but what's the point? Because their opponent could kill it really easily again.
Yeah, it's like the repeated disappointment.
Yeah. It's sort of a negative feedback loop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do think that's sort of an issue of just the concept of a deck builder and how that relates to that instant removal, that Doomblade effect. I do also think that it's interesting how the usage of champions that, like, expend themselves, that puts them in a less defensive position, is also a very trading card gamey mindset, especially for Magic. Like, the whole expending cards in general wasn't in Star Realms.
Right.
The outpost just provided passive bonuses.
Right, but sometimes you could trash them, but yeah, you didn't, like, deactivate them for a turn.
Right, yeah. Taking a champion and putting it from a passive, or from a defensive to a not defensive, but giving it an active purpose or whatever, like, an active use that makes it less defensive, that's, like, Magic combat or stuff like that.
Right.
Which I think is interesting to see that in a deck builder. Because I can't think of any other deck builders that really have that dichotomy of, like, you play a thing and then tap it to do a thing. Where, like, the choice to use its active ability is a choice, not just of whether you want it, but also whether you're giving up, you know, there's an opportunity cost.
Right.
That's not really a common thing in deck builders. So I do think that's interesting, at least. And another thing that's not common in deck builders, asymmetric starting decks.
Mm-hmm. This is something that this game does very well.
Right. This was, I think, the main drive for me to play this, because I kind of got bored with Star Realms, but I like this concept a lot. And I think this did it really well. So, for one thing, like I said, this is kind of a new selling point, which is cool. And, you know, they have different health, different sort of guide or waypoints, wayposts, guideposts, mm-hmm. guidestones. They have different things that encourage you to go in certain directions with your deck.
Right.
So, like, clerics have more followers, so they are might be more likely to get yellow and green, which care about champions. They have more champions. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fighters deal more damage. Yeah. And their one of their abilities is just a quick burst of 8 damage, so they're kind of incentivized to try and get their opponent down to that lethal range as quick as possible.
Yeah. So this is something I think is interesting, is that even though classes don't have it, like, inherent factions to them, they do encourage specific factions.
Mm-hmm.
And just for reference again, yellow is like military and religious, or like holy faith, whatever. Blue is economy and crime. Red is necromancy and magic and like vampirism. And then green is like nature, beasts, elves, druids, barbarians. Stuff like that, barbarians.
Yeah.
So you can kind of view these classes as fitting two of those in some way. So like fighter has above average like damage per card in its starting deck, and it starts with a follower or a champion, so it kind of is more encouraged to go green or red. And then,
or, well, yellow also has a lot of stuff that synergizes around having champions.
Right, but I was going to say, Ranger has, like, better champion gain, so they're better for yellow-green, which both wants, like, a swarm of champions.
Gotcha.
Whereas Fighter, like, they don't gain champions as well, they just have a pretty decent defensive champion.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, Thieves... they have good economy and decent damage, but only when they play multiples of their knives. So they want to go blue and red, which is sort of like, you know, fitting for crime, thievery, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's sort of the idea behind it.
Yeah, and that's a pretty admirable feat. To design cards that have nothing to do with any of the factions,
but still
synergize very well with those factions.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really well done. Also, just like the starting decks are flavorful for like the identity of the class. So like we mentioned that the thief wants to play multiple throwing knives in a row. That's sort of like the combo-y flurry of knives style, like World of Warcraft rogue that you see a lot in video games, at least. The, like, play a bunch of things, do a bunch of things really quickly, throw a bunch of knives.
Mm-hmm.
Or wizards fit that, like, spell-slinging concept of, you know, they want to play a lot of actions, they want to gain a lot of actions. They also have an ability that pays life to draw a card, which is, like, Warlock or Blood Mage concept. Really fits the idea of just like sacrificing defense for power.
By the way, I think that's the most powerful class ability.
Yeah,
of the five factions,
for
is
sure.
The wizard's ability to pay 2 gold and 1 life to draw a card.
Yeah, though we haven't played with the deck, but it does seem very strong, anyways. If Hearthstone is any indication,
yeah, there's very little card draw in the game, so this one little card draw effect that you can do every turn just for 2 gold. It seems very powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to, I guess, test and see.
Right, yeah. Or, like, the fact that clerics have more followers means that they're less likely to take damage to begin with. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of fitting for, like, you know, a person of the cloth or a person of the faith. You don't want to fight them offhand, you know, because then you look bad. Stuff like that.
Yeah, the flavor matches up really well, too.
Mm-hmm. The ranger doesn't start with really any good champions, but they have the horn that calls champions. So they, like, go into the wilderness and tame stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the idea, and I think that is, like you said, really admirable. I really like this sort of flavor where, like, the gameplay makes you role play an aspect of the theme in a way. You know, you are using the horn to call wild animals as the ranger. You are just throwing a bunch of knives and being very quick, like, as a thief, stuff like that. So yeah, I think that's pretty well done.
The last design thing I have to say is that it's still unfortunate that the, like, literally the best thing to do in any deck builder is to thin out your deck of bad cards, and there's still only just the one faction that has that ability.
Yeah.
Like, I would hope that, you know, it's okay if one faction is better than the others at that, but I would hope that, like, you would be able to have that in other factions. I guess it's either that or, like, everyone just clamors over those faction cards, and because it's a trade row deck builder, then there are just going to be games where one player can get all those cards on their turn and the other player cannot because they're no longer in the trade row.
Right. That is the one benefit also of having trade row manipulation, is that you could remove cards to either get the trash cards quicker, or to remove them if you don't have money, but you don't want your opponent to get them.
Right.
That this game just kind of doesn't have. But, I don't know, maybe that's a challenge to you all listeners, is try to think of a way to fix that about deck builders in general. How would you make a deck builder where it's not as good to thin out your deck?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean DC deck builder where you just get 2 points for every card in your deck. Anything else to say?
The art looks good. That's all I have to say.
All right.
So with that, we will end our episode on the discussion of Hero Realms. Thank you for listening.
Yep. Thank you for listening.
If you like, you can say
similar game, just play Dominion.
If you like deck builders, there's tons out there.
Yeah.
We recommend Dominion or Star Realms. I think Star Realms is still fun. If you like this episode, or if you like to hear more of what we have to say, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. You can also hit us up with some suggestions there. If there's a game or a topic you'd like to hear our thoughts on, you can drop that suggestion on either of our socials. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all our episodes. We have them tagged with the games we discussed. So if you want to hear our episode on Dominion or deck building, you can find the tags on our website, and that'll take you straight to those episodes where we discussed them. Also on our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/user/bgbcast, where we sell our t-shirts that have our cool podcast logo on them. I think that's about it for BG Bros plugs, so let's hear it for Mac plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack, that is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from about 12 p.m. Central Time to 3 p.m. Central Time, give or take an hour. I stream a lot of different games, a lot of exploration-based single-player games, a lot of creative games, competitive games, fighting games. I speedrun the game Hob. I'm nearing the end of the game Anodyne 2, and it's been really fun. If you go to the stream and follow that, you can get updates on when I go live, as well as if you follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. And you can also join a Discord server through the Twitch page that has both of us in it. You'll get updates on when I go live through there, as well as be able to chat with us and other fans of the stuff I do. And also, I write articles on the Board Game Bros website under the Episodes and Articles tab, under the Matt Column tag, the Matt Column tag. My most recent article was a review of a comic that I read that I really liked, and kind of touches on some points of genre I'm still working really hard on some other stuff, so I don't know when the next article will be up or what it will be about, but stay tuned.
All right, that does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.